very end of the workshop to send you all home with a bad taste in your mouth was a freewheeling and open discussion of a couple of issues. These are really kind of meshed together. One is the foundations of statistics, and in particular, this ongoing legendary debate between Bayesianism and frequentism, and what role this might play in quantum estimation theory. And the idea was to sort of transition that into something that Ephraim proposed, which is, won't someone please explain the method of maximum entropy, and for that matter, the role of information theory in the foundations of quantum mechanics, to me. So what we figured is that after that we would start out with a couple of brief comments by people who have somehow become known as poster children for these approaches, which is, say, me and Zdenek.
Robin's here. Yes.
Apparently it's focused on the Czech stay. And then we would go into discussion. At some point, Ephraim would steer the discussion in the direction of whatever the hell he's interested in. But then it occurred to me that Perimeter Institute on Friday afternoons has its weekly wine and cheese. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. So within, we are invited to join wine and cheese. It goes until 5. Don't go overboard, of course. We would like to be invited back to the Perimeter Institute. So the thought was we would sort of segue at some point into what Ephraim's interested in, and then some point, maybe 4:45 at the latest, we might segue into taking the discussion out into the bistro and have a glass of wine. And with that, let me try to be extraordinarily brief in a couple of comments about Bayesian and frequentist statistics in quantum estimation. First of all, the Bayesian and frequentist approaches to probability. Where's the hockey stick? First of all, you have what you call your radical Bayesians. These are Chris Fuchs. Really what they're talking about is orthogonal to what I'm interested in. I'm interested in estimating things. Chris Fuchs is interested in, I'm not sure what Chris is interested in. But anyway, that's radical Bayesianism. It's sort of an even more funky version of this approach, which is, what is probability? Bayesians think probabilities are just a measure of betting odds. That's it. The probability of something is the odds that I would accept on a bet about it. The frequentist statement about what is a probability is it's a fundamental property of a system, that this coin is a 50% coin, and you get that in terms of limiting frequencies after you do an infinite series of experiments. I'm much more interested in the Bayesian frequentist approaches to estimating unknown things, like quantum states. So the frequentist approach is very elegant. The estimate should be derived entirely from the data. You have taken data, this tells you about the world. So the data can be, this is a non-trivial statement, but it's true, can be condensed into one nice mathematical object, a likelihood function, which tells you for each state how plausible that state is as an estimate. And then from there, you get an estimate. That's it, a very nice chain. Since all you have to go on is the likelihood function, a sensible thing to do is to pick the state that maximizes it, therefore the method of maximum likelihood. The Bayesians have a different approach. They say that you ought to assign a probability distribution, a degree of belief, to every possible estimate. Now, the data cannot possibly provide a probability distribution over states. The data do not provide a probability distribution over states. The data provide a likelihood function over states. Functions and distributions are radically different mathematical objects. If you take nothing away from my blather today, please take that away. A likelihood function is not a probability distribution. It cannot be integrated. A probability distribution is not a likelihood function. It does not have values. It has integrals over regions of the parameter space. This is a critical difference. So maximum likelihood is talking about a function, and Bayesian methods are talking about a distribution, and to a large extent, never the twain shall meet. So there are differences there. It's worth looking into. So to get a probability distribution, a Bayesian starts with some prior that represents his or her ignorance. And then he uses the data to obtain a posterior. So the Bayesian says, well, what I want to start with is my knowledge, which is the likelihood and the prior that represents some statement about the unknown system. And then from that, I'm going to get a posterior distribution, and that's going to give me my estimate. And that posterior distribution doesn't have a maximum value, because distributions don't have values. They have integrals. And so what does the Bayesian do? One good thing you could do is pick the mean value of that distribution. There's a deeper version of this. That's kind of the cartoon version, and you've been able to read it up here. So I'll simply say, to me, a frequentist seeks the truth, the very pure approach. There's a truth out there. I want to get as close to it as I can. Bayesian says, I don't even know if I believe that there is a truth. I want to make the best decision. I need a cost function, something that tells me how good an idea it is to estimate this or to estimate this. And the Bayesian then tries to make as much money as possible or maximize the number of cookies he gets or whatever. These are, to me, the deep definitions of the difference. So since I'm supposed to present one side here, let me conclude by presenting a side. Why do I tend towards Bayesian methods? Well, not because I'm a religious Bayesian, but because I think that they work better so far. Actually, one of my current projects is trying to improve, by my standards, maximum likelihood. But here's what worries me about maximum likelihood. I'm going to pick on Daniel again, since he got me into this, so this is all his fault. This is this paper that gets it's come up all over the time in this conference, this measurement of qubits, James et al. And they were very proud of the fact that they got a reconstruction of a two-qubit density matrix that was not negative, because with tomography, you get negative eigenvalues. But it has two eigenvalues that are exactly zero. You tend, I won't try to prove this, you tend in maximum likelihood to get lots of zero eigenvalues. Now, there are exceptions to that rule. If you're doing lots of data about a very mixed state, then you will certainly get all strictly positive eigenvalues. You'll be deep inside. But if your state is relatively pure, if your process is relatively pure, if you don't have a lot of data, there are a lot of reasons why you get quite a few of these negative eigenvalues. These zero eigenvalues. Now, those could be bigger, but they can't be smaller. Let me give you an example of how you can get this. Since you're all tomographers, I'm going to assume that this picture makes sense to you. This is the Bloch sphere. I've done my sigma z and sigma x measurements. I've gotten, as is plausible, 9 out of 10 statistics in the up and the right direction. The true state is in black. My tomographic estimate is in red. The likelihood function's contours are plotted here. They're centered at the tomographic estimate, and when I constrain to the positive states, I naturally get something that's right on the boundary. Now, one of the things that worries me is that the uncertainty in this, these eigenvalues could be 1 over n, but it could also be 1 over root n, because I can be in the Gaussian, not the exponential region of the drop-off of a likelihood function. So I know that I'm overestimating the big eigenvalues, the ones that tell me as an experimentalist that my state is, e.g., entangled, or that my channel is very good. The problem is I don't know by how much. I don't know what n is. I don't know whether it's n or root n. The Bayesian methods naturally fix this. One of the things that I like most is that the small eigenvalues of a Bayesian averaging estimate provide their own error bars. There might be tighter error bars, but they provide a lower bound on the error bars. I guess I should say an upper bound on the error bars. So let me conclude by saying, what's wrong with Bayesian methods? There's a huge Achilles heel. You have to choose a prior. You have to assign prior probabilities to quantum states. Well, this is ridiculous. Where do you get this from? It's inherently subjective. And this is why Bayesian methods have been out of favor for the past century. Laplace has been reasonably ridiculed for predicting that the probability the sun wouldn't come up tomorrow is, I don't know, 1 in 10,000 or something. And I'll simply say that, in my opinion, the Minimax paradigm, which has been developed heavily in the last 10 years, actually provides a startlingly good solution to this. It lets you derive Bayesian state estimation methods that are globally consistent and that are arguably objectively good. It gets rid of the subjectivity. We've had a huge argument about that. The other problem is they're computationally intensive, but we've been getting around that. So let me suggest that unless there's any very specific questions about what I said, that Zinnick makes some comments, and then we can just open the whole thing up.
Great. Could we go to the beginning of your presentation, I mean to the first slide? I think I'm not old enough to do, let's say, some philosophical conclusion concerning the statistical foundation of the nature, but first of all, we must decide where do we want to apply any all this. If you want to speak about everyday life, I cannot say nothing against Bayesian or this likelihood approach. The point is that I would prefer to stress on the quantum mechanics, because it's, of course, different for everyday life on a unified theory, which is based on the mathematics. But in quantum theory, you have something. You have a more or less fixed structure, which is considered as the good tool for description. And concerning these points, I think for, let's say, almost everybody, there is a very little difference between the strategy which is seeking something best, or as you are calling these frequencies, sensible best estimate is the one which maximizes L, or the strategy which is simply, how do you describe it here, which is the most optimal. Yes, because in certain sense, both things could coincide. And in my rough opinion, the only difference between likelihood and this, let's say, maximal likelihood approach and Bayesian approach is the question of the normalization. But everybody knows that normalization is just a factor, something would guarantee that once you sum over all the events which can happen, you will get one. Okay, but this is the number, and up to this, I'm very pragmatic, and I really do not see this as a difference. And frankly, where I see on this first slide the only, and in fact, from my opinion, quite crucial difference is just what you are considering as the, let's say, best starting point. Yes, here it's described pretty well. You are saying, okay, maximum likelihood starts from the assumption that good starting point is just this point which maximizes the likelihood. Let's say overall probability is normalization describing all the events which can happen. Here, in the second approach, in this Bayesian approach, you are saying, okay, this top point is not the best. Guess one can do something different, for example, with the mean. It's here, it's written here, the mean value. And for me, it's really a problem. And in all papers which I have written about this Bayesian approach, people sooner or later are evaluating the quantity of this type, maybe something like that. Razor?
The chamois right there is the best.
Okay. I'll write it here. So, what's the difference? So, Max Lick, provided that you are assuming the hill, something like that, will simply start on the top. I'll call it an L. The people who believe in, or who are working with Bayesian approach, will take the quantity, which is in certain sense very widely defined as posterior distribution times density matrix. You may say, what's the difference? Of course, negligible. From the practical point of view, absolutely negligible, because for these symmetric types of the distribution, it doesn't matter if it's here or here or whatever. Of course, people are very frequently saying the difference happened in this case. Yes, it's true. Difference happened in this case. But what's the problem here? If you are taking this, you will not find a counterpart in quantum theory. Namely, you simply cannot say why this should play some special role in quantum theory. And I hope that yesterday I convinced all of you that this solution has some special role. Namely, that it's solution of the completeness relation. So something what everybody should understand somehow from the structure of quantum mechanics, that it has some play some role. Okay, so this is, in fact, my biggest biggest argument against the Bayesian approaches, because sooner or later they define something like that as a starting point. And frankly, maybe that it is really the only one, which matters from the mathematical point of view. Maybe I will add another thing. Okay, everybody see that these two things, this one and let's say the mean or something like that, in effect, in this, in the distribution with the skew. It's true, but the problem that in the approach we are suggesting as the recommended approach for tomography, this is very rare situation. Why? Because this simply indicates that your solution is on the border. But typical solution is simply something like that, which is of the type that the solution you are seeking, solution in the space of allowed solutions. And why? Because you are careful and you are really distinguishing carefully from the very beginning. And by the way, because this is just the first step, between the space which was explored and the space which was very, very weakly explored. And in that case, you are more or less for, this is more or less for sure, that you will work with this type of the solution. And now why this is so important, okay, no counterpart of this expression in quantum theory, pretty good counterpart in the mathematical theory, but then very practical problem. Once you start to evaluate this, Robin said that this is feasible. It is feasible, evaluate the integral of this type, but extremely complicated because you must use Monte Carlo simulation, et cetera, in higher dimension spaces. Much more feasible approach is just the approach when you are expanding the inner point. Frankly, I can't imagine how could you expand your likelihood function or posterior distribution in the language of Bayesian approach, how could you expand in the point which is not the maximal? Why? Because there is a first derivative here, and not only one dimension, but in many dimensions. So it means that you will definitely, you should definitely work with the skewness of this distribution. So from this practical point of view, I really see strong arguments in favor of this. And in fact, the only small difference in the normalization and in the point where you will start all your consideration for the estimate. And of course, I must stress, this is really the argumentation which is valid in quantum theory, because this, you know, what does it mean in quantum theory? Of course, we do not know what does it mean in the real world. We are working with the chances of the in everyday situation. I would like to discuss this.
You mentioned that with the maximum likelihood approach, you can expand around the maximum point.
Yes, this is by definition.
I don't understand. What do you mean by expanding? What do you use that for?
I mean, the likelihood functional is the product of all the probabilities which are somehow relevant in your approach, in your theory. Okay, you can take multiplicity of the events, and this is the function which you must evaluate somehow. And of course, if you multiply a sufficient amount of the detected data, you may expand it in the form of Gaussian distribution. So you must take some representation of this row, you must define, let's say, the variables, and what you will get in the end, I will write it really just symbolically, is the expression of this type rho j minus rho j ml. Okay? So this I mean, of course, is the minus sign is here, because you are in fact expanding the curvature of this likelihood. I don't want to say posterior distribution because I didn't normalize it up to now. Yes?
Can you just run through that equation again? I can't quite read the...
Bennett, the chamois here.
There's a cloth on the desk. Sorry. Use the cloth.
This is a very good eraser.
Okay. Sorry, I will... Okay. Here, so okay, I will
just like the
expansion of this, the relevant part of the likelihood is something like that. Double indexes mean that there will be the sum over all this I M L times rho J minus rho J M L. Yes? And this is this Fisher information matrix. And you see, because you are expanding near the top, there is no first derivative here. Here, you should take it into account.
Well, I'm new in this business, so maybe we'll like to say, well, so I've been just learning this at this conference, asking a bunch of people, and I have two questions. So regarding the difference between Bayesian and maximum likelihood. So first of all, what is the effect of the prior on the final estimation? Is there any significant effect, or always within the error box, no matter what prior we take, like as long as it's a reasonable prior? And second, in the maximum likelihood, in any practical implementation of the maximum likelihood I'm aware of, we also have a prior because it's an iterative algorithm, so we have to start somewhere.
Can I take this one? Let me answer your second one first, because that's easier. When you do the iterative algorithm, no matter what state you begin with, you'll always converge to the same answer. Because all you're doing is you are finding the maximum of a likelihood function that's fixed in place. So that's not a prior, that's just a numerical device that goes into the, it's part of the algorithm, and it doesn't matter at all. So in the Bayesian case, what you have is not a state, but a distribution over states, over the block sphere, if you will, right? And you're averaging. That distribution gets massaged by the data, and then you average that. And so the final posterior depends on what prior you pick. This is
strongly.
So in the limit of infinite data, then the data dominate the prior utterly. They push it into oblivion. In the limit of no data, the prior dominates the data that you don't have. The crossover point is an interesting thing to calculate, and it goes as a polynomial, so the number of clicks where you cross from one to the other goes as approximately the third or fourth power of the dimension. But it is certainly possible to pick a very stupid prior for which the prior will always dominate the data. An example would be a delta function at some particular state. For all reasonable priors, there is a crossover point. I will conclude by saying, in my opinion, and Jinnick may have something to say about this, if you are in the regime where the prior dominates, where any reasonable prior dominates your data, then you simply don't have enough data, and a maximum likelihood or other approach will give you what's essentially a random result because you still don't have enough data.
To this point, I may add something. Absolutely agree with Robinson. There is, in my opinion, no big difference, no difference at all between maximum likelihood or Bayesian. Anyway, in the likelihood, you may easily introduce the prior. But I personally don't like it. Why? Because all our, let's say, argumentations should be somehow objective, database. If somebody tells you what the state is, how do you want to quantify this? Because if you really plug in this term, you must really derive this. So the knowledge you get from your friend, you must derive, make derivation. Why not? But it's not physics, psychology, or whatever. Okay? And by the way, if we really believe that we should start from the scratch, there is no such a term. And if the prior comes from some previous measurement, please go ahead, put it here, because this is really, again, what you can easily do in this likelihood.
So just about the, so it's possible for the maximum of the likelihood function to exist outside the physically allowed states, is that correct?
No, I wouldn't say this. You can easily implement, you may implement constraints into your approach. You may maximize only on the set of the
state. That I understand, but the actual function itself.
It depends on what domain you define the function on.
Yes.
The most precise way would be to define the function mathematically on the domain of positive states. But in this picture, what I've showed is there's an obvious way to extend it outside.
Okay.
But what I'm
then getting at is, okay, so in a situation where, in this picture, the maximum lies outside the boundary.
Should we call it the unconstrained?
The maximum? Unconstrained maximum, unconstrained. Shall we say. The unconstrained maximum now lies outside the boundary. Then the constrained maximum will lie on the boundary. And as I understand it, that function at the point of the constrained maximum will no longer be flat. that will then immediately have a slope.
No, it's not. It's not guaranteed, but you cannot blame the method, the mathematics for this, right?
Because all I'm getting at is that before you were saying that one of the nice things about maximum likelihood is then you can expand around the maximum because it is flat and has a zero slope. But this only works if the actual unconstrained maximum is inside the volume of allowed states. Is that right?
Maybe I don't understand the problem. If you are asking this, the problem is going to be that the maximum likelihood here would look like this. But this, what does it mean? That's very simple interpretation. It means that your data were not enough for resolving the states which are equally probable. Because once you have 2 points, and of course you can see it in the expansion, the likelihood or decision information or inverse of this start to diverge. So
I'm not considering a case. I'm not considering a case where you've got so little data that you've got a large flat area. I'm talking about a case where you've got enough data that you have a relatively smooth.
Okay, so you have this shape, yes.
But then the actual unconstrained maximum is outside the physical space. So the constraints are then...
Okay. In that case, it happens that in one dimension, it looks like that.
Aren't you free to do a transformation that then makes that flat? The point is, in order to talk about that flatness, you have to be assuming a particular distance measure. And if you don't already have a prior that you believe in, you're free to transform that. So I could, replace distance from the boundary with the square root of distance from the boundary, and suddenly that slope looks like a quadratic function of this new parameter.
It looks better, but do you ever get it? The point is flat is zero gradient as opposed to...
It's always flat. Yeah? The only problem is if you are expanding near the volume at the border, so for example, near the... some eigenvalue equal to zero, it was another point, we will come to this maybe later. Then, of course, if you are taking both sides, you are a little bit exaggerating your error. But it's life, yes? This is the price you are paying for a formulation which is based on the variances of, I don't know, it's with the Heisenberg concept, it is the same, yes? You have a variance, and who guarantees that the variance defines, for example, the Gaussian function.
Ephraim, quick comment. Ephraim, it's a good idea, but actually there's a preferred metric. It's the statistical metric that Carol talked about before, and when you calculate the Fisher information, it's a matrix of partial derivatives that end up being with respect to that statistical metric. So in the case that Nathan's talking about or that I have plotted up there, what you find is the Fisher information actually diverges at that point for those cases. So that indicates you really do have a sharp point there. You can't make it go away by just picking some metric.
Yes. Thanks.
Yeah. Right. So the idea of using then that derivative to maybe give yourself an idea of your errors becomes difficult if it's lying on the boundary. Is that right?
It's a slightly bigger, let's say, yes. But what I'm saying, the typical situation, or what we are trying to do, we are trying to find the likelihood in such space where it behaves in this way. Yes, and that's why there is a first step when you must say, okay, this is the part where I can say something meaningful about the interpretation. And I do not do any claims about what is in the outside world because situations such this situation could happen there.
Okay, maybe it's a related comment. So if you pick a random state, it's going to lie somewhere within, far from the boundary, and you've got no real issue and no real distinction between the Bayesian and the kind of maximum likelihood in the result, in the end result.
Still not true.
But as physicists, we seem to be interested only in states that lie close to the boundary, in either pure states or in things close to a unitary. And so then this issue does come up.
No, we understand each other. The point is that this has nothing to do with the boundary could be everywhere here. Yes, what I'm saying is that here you do not do any assumption about this state. You are just saying that rho is bigger than zero, it's all. So if it happens that data are indicating that the state is pure, you will get it, be sure.
But people try and create pure states.
So perhaps let me clarify. So We use the maximum likelihood method all the time,
yes.
And it's fast and it's nice.
Yes.
But one of the difficulties is quoting errors, like working out what the heck your errors are in your final state. Now, as I understood it, the nice thing, the Fisher information allowed you to
make,
but then does that become, so what I'm asking is what happens in the situation where you do have, you're lying on the boundary, you've got a non-zero slope, how can you then use the Fisher information to determine your error? Because that's something that I'd really like to be able to
yes.
do.
It's, in my opinion, it's a correction of the next order, yes? Because the error that you will get is a projection of Fisher information matrix. So if it happened that it's really on the board, on the boundary, this is something what is too pessimistic, slightly pessimistic, but definitely the error scales in this order. And to avoid the situation you are talking just now, it's prior to finding most likely state, you must evaluate all the measurements. So you will simply add all your projectors, and you are asking, okay, once I have these projectors, in which space do they overlap? Because only here it has sense to look for the solutions. Okay, you can do this here.
So you're saying calculate the unconstrained solution before you calculate
the constrained solution. This is not unconstrained solution. What I'm saying is that first of all, you must define proper basis. Yes?
Yeah.
It means that if you, if you have infinite dimensional vector space, you can't believe that your data will determine the wave function, the quantum state, the wave function, whatever, everywhere. No. There will be some Hilbert space where you can do this. Mm-hmm. And this, you may learn about this if you take this G operator, the sum of all the projectors, and you simply evaluate the eigenvolumes of this. Because the eigenvectors and eigenvolumes. Eigenvectors give you the preferred basis. It means that your measurement is indicating what's the basis somehow preferred by your measurement. And this eigenvolumes tells you how effectively this Hilbert space was scanned. That's a typical behavior, something like that. Yes, it will say, okay, my measurement is working pretty well here. So provided that you will specify this basis, estimate the most likely state here, so you may evaluate the relevant error here.
Okay, I get. Can I interject something? So I understand the idea of restricting your estimate to the subspace of the Hilbert space, or even the subspace of the Hilbert of the operator space.
The measure,
right. But these problems that Nathan's talking about come up as well in simple cases. Like, for instance, I have a single qubit, a single photon, polarization, and I make sigma x, sigma y, and sigma z measurements, which completely span the Hilbert space and also the Hilbert Schmidt space.
So please, this is not true. If you take x plus y plus z, and this is what you obviously can do. This is not what you are saying.
No. Measure
sigma x. So it means minus x to this.
Yes. Yes. So I have six outcomes to my
equation. Okay. In this case, yes, you have one, right?
So this spans the Hilbert space completely, and I think that all of that is not needed. I have a very uniform measurement set.
No, but this is just the example of g equal to 1, so we must really work in full Hilbert space.
Right. But then we still end up with the problems that Nathan's talking about.
Okay. So even in this situation.
The question is, in this situation, if you will get the state on the border, yes?
Yeah. Yes.
Even in this case, I will follow this rule, this, and okay, you will get. It's intuitively clear. So you are here. You are allowed to expand the state only here, so provide even this neighborhood. You are the error, so the final prediction will be slightly over exaggerated, but the scaling may be the same.
Except that the error is there. No, sorry. You said the error involved the inverse of the Fisher matrix, F inverse. You got it right.
Justin wrote that.
There was a line there that said, you know, the error delta.
But
in that case, the Fisher matrix is actually infinite. It's singular. So if you invert it, you get zero. And the trouble is that then tells you that your errors are zero. And there's a way of seeing why this is. It's because the method believes that you're at a point where the probability of a particular outcome is exactly zero. And as Carol actually pointed out earlier, when you're over at the edge of the probability simplex, your uncertainty is zero.
You guys, but frankly, I wouldn't exaggerate the meaning of this most likely solution. It simply doesn't mean that your state is there, was there. It simply gives you a point for expansion. So, okay, if you provided it would really need such a subtle information, and you would be at the edge, you should really analyze this half of this. Yeah, but you get error function and what this.
So this is so. How do I, the question is? How do I go from my tomography solution gives me an answer lying on the border of the Poincaré sphere?
Yes.
How do I then? What do I do to work out what my error estimate is so that I don't have to take that state as the answer? So I can actually interpret that as a bit of a distribution and say, okay. This is what my state, the output is, but really my error bars are this, so therefore this is my region. So how do I do that?
I'm saying I would do the same because this is a very real situation in the realistic problems. Just imagine how many points do you have on the border and how many points do you have inside. And be sure that all the errors, and I mean now all errors, discounting errors, misalignment, whatever, will simply push you sooner or later here. So we mean that the situation of this type usually means that you are in these most complicated cases out of space when you are zero, like in Boris, but it was
not. How does counting my errors push my actual maximum inside the Poincaré sphere? So I've got my data.
It's not going to push the maximum. The mode is always going to be on the
right. There is no mode. It's not a distribution. It's not a probability distribution.
Who says? Why not? It's a maximum. It's a likelihood which you've constrained to.
A likelihood is not a probability.
He was getting coffee.
Anyway, now we are.
I know, but I.
Okay. What are you arguing about? It's just I would call it the probability distribution. If I want to. What's wrong with that?
Mathematically, it's a function.
Well, I think actually, though, this question is the one, and I'm going to scan around and look at experimentalists.
Yeah.
This is the one that every experimentalist wants to know in the room. Yeah. Is given a state, a solution to a maximum likelihood optimization that lies on the boundary, how do I then report that state in such a way that's consistent with being reasonable about errors and reporting something?
In other words, for such a state, how do I determine the error bar which must inevitably, in any experimental determination, accompany any reported number? What is the exact algorithm which gives us an uncertainty to go with the reported state?
Well, I mean, but that problem is more general, right? A single error bar is often already no good, like all these measurements of neutrino mass where m squared was negative, but it can't be, right? What you really want to do is report the distribution. And I would happily report the distribution, except that Robin will tell me it's not a distribution, it's a function.
But if you want a distribution, I have a prior to sell you.
Exactly the problem. So, yeah, do I need the prior in order to have a distribution?
But you can still solve this problem without being a Bayesian. You can solve this in a frequentist way, right? So confidence intervals, for instance, are a completely frequentist concept. Actually, Bayesians have concentration intervals.
So,
without it?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So here's the answer to Brian's question, and maybe I'll get contradicted on this. Is did the chalk go somewhere?
The chalk.
I mean, likely.
The theory that the chalk went somewhere, given that I can't find it, is a likely one. But probably the chalk went somewhere. And probably Daniel screwed up my board. So, you have something like this. Here's your likelihood function. If you're on the boundary, then your likelihood function is going to look something like this, right? Here's the boundary. And of course, it's going to be highly multidimensional, right? So that's what I'm drawing over there. So let me draw that picture. Here's the boundary. Here's the contours of my likelihood, my unconstrained likelihood function. And of course, the constraint is just the intersection here. Here's your maximum likelihood state. It has a likelihood. Call it L max. Now, I'm going to ask you to pick a fraction between 0 and 1. I'm going to call that fraction alpha. And I'm going to, once I've picked alpha between 0 and 1, I'm going to draw a contour, which is where the likelihood, which you would call as a convex function, where L of rho is equal to alpha L max. Alpha could be a half, in which case this is the half height contour right here. All the states in this convex region have likelihood at least half as great as the most likely state. Therefore, by my, I picked an alpha. You can pick 1 over E or a 1,000 if you want. These are all the possible states. These are now your error bars, right? This is your error interval. You say, well, I'm pretty darn sure the state's somewhere in here. Now you have a challenge. You have to decide whether you're going to report the maximum likelihood state along with this error interval, which means saying it's 0 plus or minus, well, actually it's not plus, it's 0 minus delta. Or you could go back to the beginning and say, well, I'm going to pick the median of this region, and that's going to be my point estimate, and it will be compatible with roughly symmetric error bars.
But what do you mean?
Anyway, I'm not saying the point estimate in this sense doesn't have meaning.
Yeah,
not meaning, because the states which are in the neighborhood are pretty probable as well. So it means that you must describe this uncertainty. I still would say that the measure of the uncertainty is something like that. So projection of the Fisher information into the operator which you would like to evaluate, the error which you would like to avoid. Of course, you are slightly overestimating the error just on the account of this half which was there, but the order is definitely the same.
So Robin, can you get me straight? The procedure you outlined, you'd say that that's completely kosher? That's completely allowed? That's a good estimate for the state that you would do by...
It's in draft form. I haven't written the paper yet.
Is it equivalent to your Bayesian estimation?
Not equivalent, no. I mean, obviously...
Is it as good as?
Well, okay, no, you need to do tests to work that one out.
That's right.
How are you
going to actually do tests in the middle of this out? What a concept.
Here's the reason this isn't written on. First of all, it's sort of statistically all measured. Second of all, remember, this is Hilbert Schmidt space we're looking at. It's D squared dimension. This is a big linear vector space. How do I characterize an irregularly shaped convex region somewhere in a big vector space? The best answer that I can come up with is you treat it sort of as a mass, right? And the sort of the mean value of the mass is the center of it, and then you've got the second, the covariant, call this moment. Gravitation. The second moment, it's got a nice name, quadrupole moment. There we go. Right, so you approximate this thing by an ellipsoid, essentially. And then that would give you a super operator, mathematically a d squared by d squared covariance matrix that would tell you exactly what your error bars are. If you do the Bayesian approach, you get exactly the same objects in approximately the same regions. But it's mathematically a lot easier to do. I mean, so Bayesian is harder than maximum likelihood. This, on the other hand, is harder than Bayesian.
I don't want worrying about 10% errors. I want something I can do with Christian's a qubit or more, which will give him an answer in a reasonable amount of time.
I talked about hedge maximum likelihood.
Robert, I think Mauro and I simultaneously came to the same conclusion, which is that this conversation has gone as far as it productively can right now. So let us thank Robin and Zedek and everyone else for this.